Servus and welcome welcome back to another episode of the Pro Hockey Pod, episode 15. For those listening, welcome back. For those watching on YouTube, you might see I'm back in Germany. So we're back to the old setting, the old background setting there. This week, we got a good buddy of mine. I'm fortunate enough to have met him when I got my first job working in hockey here in Germany. Became pretty good friends after that, stayed in touch, you know, get together on weekends, follow each other since then. And yeah, also coming to my wedding this weekend. So I guess that means, you know, he's a real friend. So welcome to the podcast, Freddy Cabana.
All right, thanks for the invite there, Andrew.
So, man, how I always start these things, just kind of going back to the beginning. So you were born in Fremont, Quebec, Canada. Hope I got the French accent down there. Is that where you kind of first learned to play hockey?
Yeah, it's Fleurimont, in to say it right. Yeah, that's where I learned to play hockey. I started at, I think, age three playing. Absolutely, yeah. My older brother playing and absolutely wanted to when I bothered my parents, nerved my parents, let's say, until they let me actually play hockey.
And what was the minor hockey structure for you, like in your hometown? Like, I know, you know, some places they have AAA, single A, double A, they have the whole works, and maybe some other places they only have a couple levels. Like, how was it in your town?
For the minor hockey in Fleurimont was mostly just like till double A's, Pee Wee, and all this. We had like double A, double B, double C, and all this. Double A was like the whole region around the whole Sherbrooke area. And then with time, they switched to kind of like fission with Fleurimont and Sherbrooke together. And then it was like from double A to double C, A, B, C, yeah, basically.
Okay. And I noticed here when I was just looking up kind of your resume here. So you're the year before your draft, you're at a major junior. You played in Magog. I'm sure there's a French way to say that. But so the QM AAA there, was that just the Quebec major AAA minor hockey league? Is that basically what it stood for and where you played for your draft year?
Yeah, exactly. That's in Quebec. Every region, every team has in their region, like a team for us in the region, Sherbrooke, like Eastern Township was Magog, and they had teams like Drummondville, then college, different college to towns they had around closer to Montreal and all this. But yeah, that's where I played in Magog for 1 year before I went up to junior.
Yeah, getting to junior, I mean, you were drafted to the Halifax Mooseheads, pretty high, I would say. Was your plan at that point, like for you growing up, was everything you kind of knew, I guess in your case would have been the QMJHL, was that always the plan? If I can be good enough, I want to play in this league?
I would say so, because in Quebec, I think we are, it's the big, big, spotlight is on the queue. We don't really know about the college routes to have a different choice that way. It comes maybe with time that maybe some scouts coming and they say, if you're interested, you could go college way. But growing up, most kids were, back in my days, were just really looking for more the junior route, which for me end up going all the way to Halifax.
And how was your transition back then, you know, being such a young guy, you know, 16 years old, going to QMJHL, and back then, you know, they still had that, you know, kind of hard knocks mentality, you know, maybe the rookies had to earn their respect from the vets and stuff, and especially the Q was always known as being a tough league. So how was that transition for you?
That was a hard transition to say at first, because you come from little town in Quebec where you barely speak any English to start, and then you end up going in Halifax, and all I remember training camp at first, I could barely understand anything, and all of my English was yes, no, and toaster maybe. And my billet family, I was asking for a spoon. I didn't even know what the spoon was, the name for it in English. So it was tough on that side. But then, of course, the hockey side, I remember the first few days, coach coming and talk to me all in English, and I have absolutely no clue what he was telling me. I needed to, or GM Marcel Paranau back then came on the ice, like by the boards, and like telling the coach, I can't speak English at all. So that was the first hurdle, was a language barrier, but which helped me later on in my career when I went to the pros. So I didn't have this English or language barrier anymore. But of course, it was different because you go from different, like playing with kids, 15, 16, some 17-year-old, and then you're going against 18, 19, 20 years old, and fighting is allowed. You play usually with a cage, and now you got a visor. So it was a big difference, but I kind of suited a little bit my playing style back then. So I was a little bit sometimes a shit disturber, I could say. But then I remember my first 16-year-old rookie year in Halifax in training camp, which basically made me earn my place in the team, is when I fought the 19-year-old to protect one of my teammates and end up winning that battle. So that the coach was like really, really happy. And then basically that put me on the team.
Well, I mean, we'll cover it later too. Like, you're obviously a very fierce competitor. Like, you're workhorse, just to say the least, and you do it in any means necessary. But with saying that you obviously earned your place on the team, earned the respect of the veteran guys with your fists, you were also a pretty good hockey player. I mean, your second year, you know, your draft year, you're playing U18 for Canada. So, you know, for those listening, like, when you're on one of those U18 teams at that young age, you know, the future is bright. You have a lot of NHL scouts at those tournaments, getting ready for the draft, looking also for, hey, potentially these guys, well, most of them, I would say, are going to be on the World Junior team coming up in 1 to 2 years. How was that experience for you at U18s?
It was awesome to be honest. First time going over to Europe for a big tournament, and the whole process going first. I think we were a week in Calgary to training camp to see who was going to make the team. And I remember back then that I was hoping to make the team, but I wasn't sure because there was a lot of players with better stats at their first rookie year and junior, 16-year-old year, and then I'm going there, 17-year-old. I was just trying to do the best I could to show what I can do. But in the end, I think it was a great, great experience. Gave me a lot of confidence going forward and see, okay, now I to improve my game even more, to see the different type of hockey system, playing the first time on a big rink in Europe, and with some of the best players all around from my age, all around Canada. And then right away, of course, when you play with the start of tournament on the line with Sidney Crosby, you're kind of like, holy shit, that kid is a year younger than everybody else, and he's better than everybody else. So that was a big eye opening, that's for sure.
Yeah, just to name some of the guys, you know, on your roster that year for that U18. I mean, you got guys like Kyle Chipchura, who had a long NHL career. John Lemers, who plays in the league we're in now in the Dell too. So he's, you know, putting up points back then. You were fourth on the team there in scoring, Freddie. So not a big deal. Couple other guys, obviously, Evan McGrath, Christopher Stieg, who had a long career. And then both your goalies, you know, you had Devin Dubnyk and Justin Pogge. So guys who both went on to have long playing careers. So obviously your team was full of talent. And, you know, that was kind of when Canada was at their peak, I would say, especially in the U18, U20 era there, where it was, you know, gold or nothing kind of thing.
Yeah, that's for sure. And like all the other years, I think before, they were all winning gold and gold and gold. And I think we're the first team in a while that didn't get home with a medal. So that was kind of disappointing. But yeah, like I said, like lots of good players that when I see play against, we're still like in contact, we will still talk to each other and all this. So it's pretty awesome to see like some guys like John Limers. It's like 18 years later, we're still playing against each other in NDL too. So it's kind of funny to see that happen.
Yeah, and I think it just it's a testament to obviously to, you know, how you guys both are as people and just kind of like your work ethic. Because obviously, you know, you guys are in your upper 30s, and to be able to still play at a high level in the Del 2 and be able to skate and be physical and stuff, you need to be in shape and be dedicated to your craft. So I think that's just a testament to you guys. So that year that you also played U18 was your NHL draft year. You end up getting drafted in the sixth round by Philly. Did you have any idea you were getting drafted? Like, was it expected, or was it maybe a little bit of a surprise? Because some guys, you know, they think, oh, probably not going to happen. And then, you know, somebody liked them and they end up getting selected, or vice versa.
No, I was kind of expecting. I had lots of team were telling me, I remember back then, like they were going to draft me earlier than the sixth round. And, you know, sometimes in a draft, like some guys slip or some guys go up if someone really likes you. At the end of the day, I was just really happy for me to be able to get drafted, to be the first hockey player from my hometown to be drafted in the NHL was kind of something special. But it was just like, okay, first step, get your foot in the door, see what it is to be among the pros and learn from the best. Getting to my training camps over there in Philly and seeing Peter Forsberg, one of my hero when I was young, idol. So that was kind of like pretty interesting, pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was one of the questions I wanted to ask you, kind of how was your experience at those first kind of development camps, training camps? Because obviously at 17, 18 years old, as you said, you're playing with guys who you've grown up watching on TV, maybe idolized like Forsberg. So sounds like it was a really cool experience. One other thing I wanted to ask you about is because I think we've talked about this, you know, obviously off camera, off the podcast here. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, you were at the World Junior Camp and you might have been one of the last guys cut there. We brought up a story with, I remember Sidney Crosby, you were telling me and how you were doing really well. And then there was some news down the road.
Well, no, that I played with Sid at the under 18. And then I remember that tournament, I was playing with him on the line and I was trying to help him in the corners. And he goes, no, Freddie, don't come and help me in the corner. Just stay back though. I'll find you. Next shift, he's doing his work in the corner, spinning guys out and all this. And then all of a sudden, the puck is straight on my blade. I just got to tap it in. That was awesome for the World Juniors. It just wasn't training camp. And then I just got a suicide pass kind of thing. And I just got lights out, didn't remember where I was, and that was pretty much the end of my World Junior's dream. And coach back then, don't need to say his name, just said long way from the heart. So, but when you get your lights knocked out and you can't keep going, that's a bad way. It's just a sad way to finish.
Kind of a sensitive topic, but you just kind of brought it up, so I'll touch on it a little. Is the difference back then of the mentality of like playing through injuries, you know, especially head injuries, concussions, like there's so much nowadays in the news about it. And, you know, so back then it was kind of the old school mentality that, you know, tough it out and get through it kind of thing.
Oh yeah. 100%. It was back then, it was just, oh, okay, you got some headache, take ibuprofen or Aleve or take something and just keep going, you know. But then nowadays it's we're a lot more aware of the danger of it. So yeah, just sadly it happened, but that's part of hockey. And we've got to be actually happy that with the time and it's changed and now we're more aware of it and we can save and guys can prolong their career when they take really the time to heal their concussion. And because there's more than just hockey. After hockey, you still have a life, a family. You got to be able to go and work, and you need your head.
Yeah, can't say it better than that. If there's any young listeners listening, you know, if you feel something ever like that in your head, you know, don't be afraid to talk to somebody, say something to a parent, a coach, go see a doctor. Because at the end of the day, as Freddie just said, it is you know, one of the most important things in your body, and it you know, there is a life after hockey where you don't want to have any lingering effects, that's for sure. And I'm happy that, you know, hockey in general is starting to turn the page on that. It's not like it was 20 years ago. So I'd say that's something very positive about, you know, safety in general. But
I think I think experience I can say for that, for injuries, that is head injuries or any type of injuries, is before the old mentality was like, who can tough it up? Nowadays, mm-hmm. teams are investing so much money in their players, and they're looking to say, okay, more, what am I getting back on my investment? They don't want guys toughening up so much. They want to make sure guys are playing 100% and can bring their full potential for the money what they're paying them. So that's kind of a big shift in how people see and treat hockey players in general.
Mm-hmm. And then, so back to just transitioning back to you after, you know, your draft there, you end up playing two more years in the QMJHL. So then you had a, you know, there's a big decision to make. You know, I think you're 20 years old. You have a chance to go back, play your overage year, or go right into pro hockey. You evidently went and played, you know, 3 years in the AHL. Did you feel at 20 years old that you were ready to make that jump to pro hockey?
Yeah, at the time, let's say, to be honest, I was ready physically. I was pretty strong or pretty like in shape for 19, 20 year old to go play pro. It was a good experience. It's a totally different game, but as I always say, the higher you play, easier it is to play. You go to an NHL training camp, everyone is so good. You just got to do your job. The puck's coming on the stick and it's simplified the game, and lower you go down, it's a little bit harder. But in general, I think, yeah, it's a big decision to say, okay, do I go pro? I stay for one more year. And on the other side, you could have a full scholarship paid. If you play a full 5 years with one team in junior, there were decisions to be made. But I think for most kids at this point, you just see put your foot in the door. You're just a step away from playing pro and believing in yourself, you can make it. So you take the jump, you take the chance to go pro, that's for sure.
I think a lot of kids too, like back then the rule, I think it's the OHL or CHL in general, all three leagues, they've done a better job now with honoring packages. So like, you know, every year you play, I think you get a year paid for. It doesn't matter what round you were taking in these days. And also like you have that leeway year that if you play 5 years in the OHL and you want to go play pro for a year, you can go play and you'll still get your package. Where I know back when you played, it was as soon as you signed that contract, yeah, exactly. Package is gone. But I think some kids at the same time, you know, when an NHL team comes calling and you're 20 years old and you're thinking, okay, like I have this 3 year window of this contract and entry level, and then whatever happens after that, hopefully I can earn another. But I think some are probably thinking too, one, school wasn't really my thing, so I'm not going to worry about it. Or two could be, well, I'm going to make money where that I could just pay it myself, because there is a big difference in Canadian university prices to American university prices. So some kids could believe, hey, if I really want to do it when I'm done, I'll have money to do it.
Of course. But I think just this is a lesson of life where sometimes when you're older and you're getting towards the end of your career, it's like, oh, maybe we're a bit smarter to do the college or like the school side first and then secure yourself for the future, because like you see a lot of good players over here in Europe who played long enough to see, okay, some guys they played after junior school, college in Canada, and then they're still really good hockey players. You can still have a chance to make a living from playing hockey, but then you got something in the background that to turn back on to once your career is over. But like I said, when you're 20 years old and your dream is to play the NHL, sometimes you just look what's in front of you. You don't really look, okay, what are my other options, and really weigh the pros and the cons of everything.
I think that comes with maturity too. Like when you're 20 years old, you're definitely not as mature as you are at 35. And, you know, you can make an argument, honestly, either way. I think that's just with anything. If you had gone to school after instead of signing pro, maybe one day you look back and be like, man, if I had signed pro, like who knows, if I had a good year, I could have got a chance. And you know what I mean? Like you can put an argument to either side of it.
Either way, it is always like we say in German, if I had get it, you know, like we would have, if we would have,
yeah.
If I would have done that, it would have been that. But in the end, it is like it is. You make decision and you learn from it. And yeah, everyone at the end of the day makes the decision what's best for them and go from there.
Yeah, I think the English saying is shoulda, coulda, woulda, or what if. But so after that deal with the Philly Phantoms there, I mean, your first year you put up 19 points as a 20-year-old. I'd say that's pretty good. And then eventually you end up making your transition to Europe. So I'm just curious, you end up going to Dornbirn there in Austria. Like, how did that kind of opportunity come about?
Let's say my third year in Philly, I had a really good training camp. Kind of like one of the last guys, if not the last guy, getting sent down from the Flyers in EA. I had a good end of training camp in EA, and then all of a sudden playing 2 minutes a game, and that was not really what I was looking for. And being told, okay, every time you pass a red line, you dump the puck in and you let your winger go forecheck. So I wanted to play hockey and then enjoy playing hockey again. It was kind of tough just to play a couple minutes a night and not really get anything done. So I thought, okay, let's just make a change. Let's try to see in Europe what I can do. And then at first, I had only tryouts, offers from Fierce League here in Germany or other leagues. And then Dunburn came with a good offer till the end of the season. I thought, okay, that's why not go that way and then see how it is and first see if I like it in Europe. If I don't, then I can try back in the East Coast the next year, or I just try to find if I like it, then I try somewhere else in Europe. I kind of liked it, so I have been in Europe ever since.
I was going to say, ladies and gentlemen, spoiler alert, he hasn't gone home since.
No.
So obviously, you know, you end up, after that Dornbirn season, you end up going to the Heilbronner Falken, who are in now it's called the DL2, but back then it was called Germany 2, Bundesliga, SWI, second league, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, that started a long journey that I'm sure you couldn't predict, that, you know, involved three championships, you know, stint in the DL in the top league. And one thing I just noticed about your career for the most part is, you know, I'd say for the most part, you know, you're a guy that a team likes to kind of build into their core. You know, like Ravensburg, you were there 3 seasons. Hamburg, you were there 2. Bietigheim, you were there, you know, 5.5, whatever you want to call it. Bayreuth, you were there 2. Heilbronn, now you're going into your technically 3rd year with Heilbronn, but you obviously changed in between there. So do you think that kind of is a testament to how you are as a, like, as a person, like, kind of your character of, like, you know, I'm one of the core guys, you know, I wear my heart on my sleeve?
Well, I think wherever I go, I try to just give it all. When I'm in something, I really go with all my heart and all my work in it, and I want to make it work. I'm always someone to try to see the glass half full, just try to help my team, whatever it is. Like, losing sucks. Pure and simple. Losing sucks. I love hockey, but winning, it's a lot more fun. And that's what you remember at the end of your career, is those years where you won championship, where you had good seasons, where you had a chance to do something great. So I think for me, it was just always, what can I do to help my team win the most? And if it's getting goals, it's goals. But for me, I just really see myself more as like, two-way players, all-around player, where every detail of the game is important. And I learned at a young age, my staying in the AHL, how important winning faceoffs are, or like how important it is to play good defense, block a shot, is as important as doing good play offensively. So maybe it's just my type of play, my style of play help me stay longer with teams. But I think it's just my willing to do whatever it takes for their team to win and help make my teammates better around me. That probably keeps me around longer in the teams I played for.
Whoever's listening, like, I just think you made some great points there, Freddie, is, you know, there's a lot of people, they grow up and, you know, what's flashy? To be the goal scorer, or, you know, if you're a goalie to make the flashy saves. But the people that last the longest, they obviously have to have a good work ethic, you know, stay in shape. They have to be really good people, team first people. And as you said, every team you go to, you might be given a different role. You know, a coach comes in, thinks you're better at this, whatever it is. And the people that succeed and are forever in these organizations are the ones that just go, okay, you know, I'll do what you need me to do. I'm not going to be negative about this. You know, maybe you do believe you could do more, but at the end of the day, you're going to do your job that you're required to do. And then if you get a little, do a little more as well, I think that's where the bonus comes in. And I think some players honestly really, you know, I know people growing up are at a young age and they might not get that, but the quicker you get, people can realize that, the better, because it truly is what helps prolong your career, helps organizations want to have you back, you know, build a team around you or include you as their core, is having those values. And it just speaks to your career. I mean, you've played in Germany for how many ever years? I would say almost 15 years now. And there's a reason for that. Obviously, another reason is you have a German passport now, because so you're not an import. But the main thing is you were a guy that could be put in any role, be a goal scorer. Yeah, I'll put up 53 points for you, 49 points. Oh, you want me to be a third line center, play two way? Yeah, I can do that too. And there's a reason that you've, you know, got three championships out of it.
Well, I think that's the, at the end of the day, it's a team sport. If you want to do something, a single sport, and go play tennis or golf, you know, for me, it's all about the team. And it's, I'd rather be a good player in a good team than a great player in a shitty team. Because at the end of the day, you want to be, like, for me, I always go every season, I'd rather be consistently good as sometimes great. Let's say, like, that's all the saying, I think, goes, or the expression. It's just, if you do your job and you every day to get better and to help your team, your teammates and your team to get better and better, you do your job. And I can't put the, how I can say that, just the importance of team or team structure or team or this chemistry in a team, the guys in the restroom to have a good atmosphere, like to work for each other. It's a lot more important than just like getting truth. Trophies for top scorer or anything. Like, you look at players in the NHL over the years, a guy like Zetterberg or Datsyuk, they were good enough to be top scorer in the NHL every year, but they were in that culture in Detroit to do whatever it's best for the team, and they would have 20, 30 points less of what he could have, but they were winning championship and every year in the playoffs. That speaks a lot more for me. Players like that, that will do everything for their team and win. And at the end of the day, throughout your career, you're a winner.
Yeah, I mean, I think anyone would tell you if they could have an NHL, if they could have a 100-point season and or win a Stanley Cup and have a 40, 50-point season, they're going to choose to win the Stanley Cup, because obviously that's what lasts forever. And that, to me, is the ultimate success. You know, not what you do during the season, but what you do in playoffs. How was the hockey back then in Germany to DL2 back when you came over? Obviously, you were in Heilbronn there for 1 year, and then you went on to Ravensburg for three seasons. So how was the league back then?
Oh, so tough. Physically a lot harder, I think. We had five imports back then, the first couple of years. Then it went down to four. But hockey in general back then was a lot harder, like tougher physically. So more hitting than now. Now it's more on speed and like to be good technically, good with the puck and all this. The hockey changed in general. So that happened too in the second league here. But I think back then, yeah, it was a lot more chippy, like chirpy hockey, hard camp, fart nose hockey. That now it's more like a skill and all this. But through the years, I think one thing is just you got to adapt to whatever it is. Before, guys were a lot bigger. You had to be a lot bigger than was in Yale over here the first few years. Now it's, yeah, you got to be more speedy and all this, be able to move. So for any players who want to age well, and you got to adapt to what type of hockey's been playing.
And obviously your first year there in Ravensburg, you guys, you win the championship, Meisterschaft. Just talk about that, like kind of, your experience there in the playoffs, how crazy it must have been. I can only imagine. And, that group of guys.
Oh, that was awesome. It was a year where I think our team had talent like crazy, and we had a really strong team from top to bottom, and were really good goalies, two really good goalies that could have been number one goalie in every team. And to win that first championship over here, the team we had was awesome to go such on a run in the playoff where we only lost one game the whole playoff. Then at the end, in the final, you play against your biggest rival in Schwenningen, and to beat them in three was kind of, back then was the best of five for the final, but like to win in a sweep was pretty awesome. And to first of three championship over here for me, but I think kind of laid the ground to say, hey, I want to do this again, and I got the chance for it, so I'm pretty appreciative for that.
Yeah, and you get just, you starting your young career in Germany, I think it just gets that on your resume. You're known as a winner, a guy that can get it done, right? And that goes a long way. As I said, you played two more years there in Ravensburg. And then I'm curious, what age did you end up getting your German pass at?
I think I was 26 or 27 years old, maybe. Back then, 2013, end up having it. So
your last year in Ravensburg, you was 2012-2013. That would have been your first year as a German, because the year after, you end up going to the DEL. So for those listening not so familiar with the DEL Del 2, you're like, well, what's weird about that? He went up a league. It's weird in the fact that you at that time, you're in 27, 28, I believe, going up is kind of, for older Germans, not always the easiest, because, a lot of young Germans would get, because of the rule, get a chance to go up to the DEL, kind of stuff like that. I can see you looking at me, not going against your hockey skill, Freddie. I'm just saying in general. So how did that opportunity come about? Because, you had just finished your fourth season in the Del 2, obviously with one championship. How did you, get the chance to go to Hamburg?
Well, I think, first of all, even with the success having second league as an import, I was being told as an import I was not good enough to play in the DL. But then as soon as team learned I could get my German pass, then some teams showed interest. And then, lots of team had interest. And then with my agent back then, really influenced me to go towards Hamburg. That would be the best fit for me, which we tried. And at the end of the day, it was a year and a half basically there, just tame with injuries, which kind of sucks. But I think in the end, it was a good experience. I could see that I could play there. But for some reason, then I decided to come back closer to home.
And back then, just, as you said, you had some injuries. Believe you only got 22 games in the 1.5 seasons you were there, but you still had 10 points your first year in 18 games, which is pretty good for being your first year up in the DEL. But my question for you is, how did the leagues vary back then? I obviously know, saying the obvious, it's like, how does the NHL differ from the AHL? But was there a massive difference, or do you think, the top teams were top because of their money? They had all the best Germans in the world, but maybe the lower teams, like, there'd be some top two Del 2 teams that could compete with them if they had maybe a series or something, or if they were playing multiple games against each other.
Well, I think, you got the big teams where a lot of money and all this, that they're on their league on their own. And like the lower team, even back then, I thought if you put the rule the same for both, that they can have, both teams could have the same amount of imports, because that's the big difference. If you have four imports in the second league and you have nine in a DL, that's totally a second line where you can have an import. That makes a big difference. But in the end, I think, I think it would be really interesting to see what would happen, because some really good teams in the second league, the top team in the second league, they still have really good German where they could all play in DL. But probably for some reason they wanted more ice time and then just sit on the bench. or because they were over the age of 24 because of the rules, then they had to go down. But he would have been able to play in DL, so it would be really interesting. But I think in the end, yeah, there's a step. Like in everything, I think everyone is a little bit better. Makes the job easier for everyone. And some teams, they had like import on the fourth line. So it just shows like how deep some teams were. And in the end of the day, like I said, it would be interesting to see if it would be a big difference. But I think, yeah, there's from just top to bottom, it's more evenly matched in a DL than maybe in the team in the second league back then.
Yeah, and you just brought up a good point. Like the DL, they obviously have more imports. I believe it's 8 or 9. The Del 2 now is 4. When you were playing back then, it might have been 5. But you would never see a team have their import on the fourth line, for example, in the Del 2. Like in the Del, you can get away with it because you might have the quality of Germans and you might sign an import being like, hey, you've been really good in this league, in this role. We want you to be the same here and we'll pay you this money. And, you know, it's obviously, you know, the luxury is there to do that where it's not so much in the Del 2. But so after Hamburg, you transfer to Bietigheim. So this is the core of your career. Like this is where I get excited talking about it because, I mean, the stats don't lie. Bietigheim is obviously rivals with Heilbronn where you and your family reside right now. It was kind of a coming home for you, but you were going to the rival. But let's just talk how it is here. In 5.5 seasons in Bietigheim, you had 4 finals, 2 championships. So, and those 4 finals were in a 5-year stretch. I don't really count the last year because there was obviously Corona. So in your first 5 years in Bietigheim, you were in the finals 4 times, won the championship twice. Your second time winning against me, that sucked. What do you think made these Bietigheim teams so successful? Because as I said, 4 finals in 5 years. So even if you guys aren't winning, you're still final top 2 teams in the league every year, especially when it matters in playoffs.
Well, I think from top to bottom, the team was well built from coaches to assistant coach or GM. And I think everyone understood what we could do. No one had their ego. We all left our ego at the door type of thing. That was the first thing being taught when you get in Bietigheim. It's like, leave your ego at the door. We're here about to win championship every year from day one. That was the goal. There was nothing less talked about. It was, okay, we're going for the championship. And it was nice to see when you have like a really good professional atmosphere and everyone right away from beginning on going the right direction, going to this one goal that we had at the end of the season. And we know, okay, we had a lot of experienced guys, different type of players, and we had guys were putting 70, 80 points per season, you know, and sometimes like they didn't bother, they didn't work complaining if they were put on the second power play, because some guys worked better on the first power play, but then the second unit were still producing. So it was a lot of guys sacrificing themselves for the team, and that kind of like all gel, and everyone was willing to do a little bit more for the other guys beside him, because everyone was seeing there was no asshole in the team and everyone was working together. So that was a great team chemistry.
And I think it all flows together, right? Like if, for example, you know, guys are being asked to take roles that maybe they weren't comfortable with or thought they should be higher or whatever, if it wasn't working, then you might see some problems. But I think you were having success every year, and these core guys were like, hey, every year I'm going to come back. I'm probably going to be in the same money range, but we're treated great here. We have a great facilities, great apartments, great cars, great little city. It's professional. Like you said, when I worked there after I was done, I like right away, you just feel that presence of we are the Bietigheim Steelers, which I thought was pretty cool to see. And then as you said, or as I was saying, every year you knew you guys are going to be a top team and have a chance for that championship. So it was never about egos. It was never about, hey, how many points am I going to get this year? It was like last year, like the years before, We know what to do. We all know our roles here. Everybody gives it their all. You know, you had that solid core. I think that's really key in Germany. If you can have a solid core of German players and some imports too, who wanted to stay, they always wanted to be there. That goes a long way. And I think it's a testament to the players, but obviously, you know, the GM, Marc St. Jean, a good friend of ours. I mean, to have that consistency every year, you know, surprises me that guy's still not in hockey. One of those smart hockey guys. Hopefully he can return one day. Shout out to him. But yeah, I mean, as I said, like, you guys having that success every year, I've personally experienced it. The 17-18 season, I got traded to Garmisch there at the deadline of playing you guys in the finals. Unfortunately, you know, I got a silver medal, you guys got a gold medal. But just that ability, like, talking from experience in that finals, like, you guys, I think you were on the third line during that series, and that was shocking, but you had a role to do and you guys did it tremendous. And, you know, everybody bought in, and that's why, you know, you guys beat us in five. Like, it was, the games were close, but it wasn't like a series where it could go either way, where I really felt you guys were built for playoffs.
Like this, like, we see it too in the NHL. It's just like, we won, I think, 2015, and then we lost 16 and 17. And then when it comes to 2018, we're like, okay, that's our chance again. Now let's learn from losing the last 2 years and make sure that we come on top. And just maybe the experience of most guys were there. We changed over the years, a few guys in there and there. But the core was basically the same. And we really wanted to say, hey, maybe that's our last chance all together. So let's make sure we're getting this thing done and bring the trophy back to Bietigheim. But like I said, it's always about the team chemistry, this feeling you have in a dressing room when that everyone buys in into whatever the goal is. Some teams, the goal might just be making playoffs because their budget is smaller or they're going through big changes. But whatever the team goal is, just to everyone to buy in. And at the end of the day, everyone wants winners. And if you win, I'd rather have a guy that been through a winning culture than the guy that puts a lot of points in the team, but every year somehow is always playing playdowns or in the losing situation. So I think it goes a long way, but it goes, yeah, through the character from all the players, but the way the team and from the manager down, like Mark and Kevin back then, and those guys, that what they really bring in the dressing room to this attitude, this like character that they transpire, this attitude, they transpire what they want their team to be like. We had an identity and we knew what it was and we're playing that way.
Yeah, 100%. I forgot to mention Kevin too. He's obviously been in Germany coaching a long time, playing before that, and his resume speaks for himself. I think, you know, Hanover is obviously putting together a solid team again this year, spending a lot of money. So I think, you know, they could be up for it again, especially with Kevin back there. But so after those 5.5 years in Bietigheim, you know, unfortunately, all good things come to an end. You end up going to Bad Nauheim after that, and then Bayreuth. One thing I want to just touch about with those years, obviously, I think there was some kind of maybe some doubt from the outside. You know, me working in the business, I definitely had heard some stuff where, hey, Freddie's getting older, like, he's not the same anymore. And, you know, for example, you know, you had 29 points in 38 games in Nauheim. I know you had some injuries that year, but you were still putting up points at a great pace. And then your next year in Bayreuth, I think you had 30 points. And I think, what, 25 of them were as a defenseman? Like, you were starting as a D, then told to go take a face off, then back to D for another situation. Like, just talking about a guy who can play any role, you literally could. The only thing they didn't ask you to do was strap the pads on.
Yeah, I think the year after my last year in Bietigheim, I had through a few injuries in Bietigheim over the years, I had a tough time, let's say, to stay healthy in my years in Bietigheim, but then kind of like took the time to really work on those injuries to make sure I wouldn't have the problems again, to be healthy again. And from there, everything came back together. My body really got back and where I always had it, where I wanted him to be. And then, yeah, the year in Bad Nauheim, it was a learning curve to being away for the first time, away from my family, living mostly alone in Bad Nauheim in that Corona year, all alone, where my family couldn't really come. Then in Bayreuth, when I went there, we just had lots of injuries, and every day I never knew which position I would play, basically. And the coach, Peter Cuyala, said to me one day, we need someone to play D, and he had trust in me, I could do the job. And then I end up playing 3/4 of the season as a D, power play in front of the net, or always different position. And from there, yeah, I think just for me, whatever the team needs me to do, and I can adjust to the situation. And it was a good learning experience, and shows when you really work hard and take care of your body and you are a professional, you will prolong your career, that's for sure.
You're just the ultimate utility guy. Can put you anywhere, you'll have success at it. And like everything in hockey, I think it's cool when things come full circle. So you began your career with the Heilbronner Falcon in Germany. Now you're back in Heilbronn. I still think you have some years left in you, so I'm not going to say it's going to end anytime soon, but in theory, there's a chance it could end there in Heilbronn. How does it feel for you just kind of looking back, being like, here's where I started, this is where my family is, and now I've come full circle and I'm back here and obviously, you know, going to be one of the leaders this year on Heilbronn?
Well, 100% that it felt unreal as soon as I got back in circumstances this year in Heilbronn. To be able, first of all, to be home every day with my family, that was something special after 2.5 years being away. But at the same time, to be where I started, like we said, 2009 in Heilbronn, to play again here, and like over the years, even if I wasn't beating him or wherever I was, I always kept following the team, kept following what was happening. And like, of course, when you have family living in the area, and in summer months, I was always here. I could see how important hockey, you know, when how much fans there is around Heilbronn. So for me, it was a great experience to come back and a great chance for me to come back and say, okay, I want to do whatever I can to help this team, bring my experience, what I had since I played when I was 23 years old back then, to now as 36 years old, next year as 37 years old, and bring all my experience, try to help the young guys. And from there, for me, yeah, it's every day, like I always say, every day to get better. As a player, I can still get better. 37, we see that, like guys in like Crosby in the NHL or older guys, they can play forever, seems like. And whatever I can help the younger guys get better and tips and all of this. And yeah, for me, it's just I couldn't be happier. The situation that I'm in now. Sadly, we went down. We're down in the Oberliga, but I think it's a good way for us as team to have, basically, it's a fresh start. We're gonna have, I think, 17 new players, only 4 players staying from last year. And for me and like Corey Mapes, who played forever here in Heilbronn, the hometown boy, to be still part of it, held the team to go back up, and like, we just got to do step by step. And if it takes 1 year, 2 or 3 years, we don't know, because the world of hockey, a lot of things can happen through injuries or this or that. But I think, yeah, it's just proud to be back, to be a Falcon, and just whatever I can do, yeah, over the years. And I know I've got lots of hockey left in me. I want to keep playing as long as I can. Because at the end of the day, I still love hockey. The passion is still there, and looking for every game, every practice. That's just my passion, and try to bring that down to the young guys.
Yeah, I mean, passion is obviously key, and as you said, now it's about teaching those young guys, which I think is great. And I definitely agree with you when you say that. You know, it's unfortunate that Heilbronn went down. Obviously, I played for them as well in the Dell too, and I loved wearing that jersey. I love the fans there, the cool arena. It really is a hockey town, but sometimes you do need a fresh start, kind of a rebuild. And You know, I do believe that Hal Brown will be back up one day. And as you said, it could be after next season, could be in 3 years. I don't think there should be a deadline. I think if it's done the right way, when it happens, it'll happen. You know, it's time to get some new blood in there. And as you said, you got guys like yourself and Corey Mapes, who hopefully one day I'll get him on here too, because he's been there on multiple occasions, you know, a local guy. And, you know, I'm sure he would have some good insight on it. But you brought up a cool thing. It allows me to transition. So you said, you know, you're 37 years young now. How long do you plan to play for? Or are you kind of just taking it year by year?
I go year by year. I always had the goal to play until I was 40. I want to have 20 pro years in me. If the body is still cooperating and the passion is still there, I don't see myself stopping. I think as long, yeah, the body's there, the fun is there, the passion is there, and I can still follow. Of course, I don't want to be like an old man that can't follow anymore, but the way I just think, the way if I keep the way I've always been taking care of my body, going through every situation, or just being professional about it. Every year, doing all my work on and off the ice, watching what I eat and all this. And all that, I don't see why the end should be anywhere near right now. I think it go year for year. But at the end of the day, we never know what happened, what can happen. Of course, 40 would be my dream age to play. Oh, maybe I just try. If it keep producing, be successful, and still be an important part of a team to win, and to play good, I will try to beat my good buddies, Luka Slavatinsky, and play until I'm 41, 42.
The old Slava, I never thought that guy'd be done, and he just retired, so congratulations to him. One of the things I want to ask you, like, what's your secret? Like, you've obviously been very known for your fitness, you know, just your dedication to the game, as you said. Like, do you have any tips for maybe some young listeners listening about like dieting or training? Because obviously, whatever you've been doing is clearly working. You know, you're 37 years young and you're more jacked than most people I've seen. So,
well, I think maybe to a part of it was when I started my pro years, you had to be big and strong, and that was the goal. And playing what Philly had for me was to be a third, fourth line player in the NHL, fight guys and all of this. So, of course, helped me like put weight on and work hard. But I think now the game changed, but it's just to take the time. You know, it's a long journey. And if you want to play and you want to be successful, just the details, work on your weaknesses, to really look deep and say after every season, okay, what can I change? What can I improve? Whatever it is, if it's your speed, your strength, your quickness, just to work more like the mental aspect of the game. There's always something someone can do, and it just to be honest enough with yourself to say, okay, this year, that's what I felt I need to improve in the next season. And okay, for me, I studied to a fitness coach. I work as a fitness coach, as a personal trainer. So this helps too, that I know exactly what I need to do to help myself to be ready. And the biggest thing is just to be ask questions. Be open to learn new things, because someone else might have a better... You could learn something from someone else by asking questions, and that's what I did also through my whole career. That is learning about face-off. When I was in Quebec playing summer league with Yannick Perreault, back then it was one of the best center in the NHL. Every year, best center face-off guy. Or when I went in Hamburg, or the coach Serge Aubin was a really good center too, and I asked for more tips to how to win faceoff, which helped me a long way after that to win to be a really good center. So there's every aspect we can always work on. It's just to be open to work on and never be satisfied. I think that's the biggest tip I can give to any player, young player, just the willingness to learn and to ask questions. You don't get better if you always talk. You get better when you listen to experienced players or coaches or fitness coach or people who could help you. And yeah, be honest with yourself about your weaknesses and improve them.
Three more questions for you. I'll speed through them. I'm losing light here in Germany, but so you kind of talked about it. Like you're a fitness coach as well. You've been doing some work like that the past couple of years. Is that where you kind of see yourself after hockey? You want to stay involved with kind of the fitness side of it? Maybe be, you know, in a gym taking clients, or do you want to get into coaching?
I think it's right now. It's like both ways are interesting for me. I would love to stay in hockey, stay in coaching. And also I'm a fitness freak, so I love this training aspect to get the best out of myself, or like get the best out of my athletes that I train to really make sure that they bring their full potential. So I think maybe a mix of both would be great. But those are both options where I'm keeping open for sure. And then, but for sure, I would be either in training or coaching kids or adults.
That's awesome. And when you look back at your career, obviously it's not over yet. We're still going. We got a couple of years till 40 at least. And then I joke, you're going to play 10 more for the Ice Baron in the fourth league. Did you think you would have the career you had when you look back on it? Like, did you, you know, when you were playing major junior in Halifax, did you think, yeah, you know, this is just, still got 20 more years of this, you know?
Well, I think to play as long, that's really, really good. I think that's something I'm really proud of. Of course, when you're young and come from Canada, you hope play NHL and all this. You have different goals, but throughout your career, you adapt to the situation. Things happen. Sometimes it doesn't work like you want. But at the end of the day, I think I'm really proud of the career I had. Stayed true to the person I was. That is my character or what I do. Yeah, I think I'm pretty proud of what I achieved. There's still ways to go. But every day, like I said, it's always about the journey. I meet a lot of different people and I, over the years, stay friend with. And that's too something special with hockey, that you can play anywhere, you meet a different person, and then 10, 15 years later, you see those people again, or you're still in contact with them. And you remember those memories you have with those guys, that is junior to pro to whatever age you are. That's something special.
Yeah, I mean, you just nailed it on the head there for me. Like, I always tell people, kind of enjoy the process, enjoy the journey. Every stop on the journey, you know, you have memories there. You'll look back 10 years, 15 years from now, and there'll be people there you've met who you're still in touch with, or people you miss, you know, wish you'd kept in touch with. And as I've told many people on this podcast, everybody's path is different. Everybody's NHL is different. You know, like yourself, you've been playing in Germany. This will be your 15th year, I believe, in Germany. So, you know, that's a tremendous feat. And as you said, you're not done yet. Last question here. You kind of talked about it before with, you know, always wanting to learn, kind of asking questions, you know, being honest with yourself. But I like to always ask the guests, like, what is, in your case, I think there'll be multiple because you've already nailed one down, but what is one piece of advice or multiple pieces of advice you would give your younger self? So if I was Freddie Cabana at 18 years old, 17 years old, what are some pieces of advice you would say to him?
Oh, that's, it would be too many things. Oh, I think it's just, you know, what you always wish that you knew when you were younger. For me, probably was just to work smarter, because I was just such a hardworking guy and I wanted, my desire was so strong that I probably at some point hurt myself too much in the way I was training, or wanted to do too much weight and all of this. Maybe just to be a little bit smarter on that way, not to overdo it. that would have been my biggest thing. But at the same time, it made me who I am today. So in the end, maybe just this, and just to enjoy every second, because you never know when it's done.
And for you, it's still going, which is awesome. Freddie, man, I appreciate you doing this. And it's obviously, you've had a tremendous career, especially, in Germany. You've obviously, as we've talked about, won many championships. You've become a core guy on a lot of teams, built a life over here, have a family now, a wife and four daughters. So I'd say that's a success. That's a win in terms of, you know, what pro hockey did for you, both on and off the ice. Without it, you might not be over here. So I appreciate you taking the time to come on the podcast, and I'll see you Saturday, man.
See you Saturday. Hopefully you're ready to drink.
Yeah, I've been known to have your occasional Chardonnays. What of it?
It's a big day for you. I'm happy to be part of it.
Appreciate that. And for those listening, hope you enjoyed this one again. And until next week, cheers and ciao.